The following is a paid commercial program from the Ulster County Department of Health. This is the Healthy Ulster Radio Show, a weekly talk show exploring community health and sustainability with guests representing a broad spectrum of community partners working to make Ulster County the healthiest in New York State. This program is a community affairs presentation of the Emergency Department at Health Alliance Hospital in Kingston, a member of WMC Health.
Welcome to Healthy Ulster Radio. This is Vincent Martello, Director of Community Health Relations for the Ulster County Department of Health. Today we're going to be talking about technology and innovation for addressing heart disease. And we have Dr. Ramanas Rojas. He's a cardiologist in clinical cardiac electrophysiology at Health Alliance Hospital. Welcome, Dr. Rojas.
Hi, good morning, Vincent. Thank you very much for the kind invitation to allow me to speak in this medium to address cardiovascular diseases.
It's nice to have you here. Thank you for coming. Can we begin first by informing our listeners about exactly what cardiac electrophysiology is and then how you came to work in this space?
Yes, basically, cardiac electrophysiology is a sub-discipline of cardiology where we basically deal with arrhythmias, which are irregular heart rhythms or heartbeats in the heart. One way or the other, these happen to be secondary to electrical disturbances in the heart. I came to be interested in particular in regards to this subject because A is one of the most common prevalent diseases involving the cardiac diseases that really are prevalent in our community. And the burden is increasing year by year. And we're seeing a lot of patients and significantly when these patients are not recognized and treated appropriately, this can actually lead to very negative cardiac outcomes.
Mm-hmm. And we know that heart disease in general, and that encompasses many different forms of heart disease, is the number one leading cause of death in Ulster County and the nation and has been for many, many years. So, Dr. Rojas, tell us about the specialized services at Health Alliance Hospital in cardiac electrophysiology. Exactly what services are provided?
Yes. So basically, we have been providing Health Alliance cardiac electrophysiology service or a robust complete program for the last 3 years. And what that program entails is basically treating cardiac arrhythmias, those patients with arrhythmia problems or basically irregular heartbeats or heart rates that have symptoms as a consequence of that. That can actually come in many different forms. It can come with very rapid heart rates or it can also come with very slow heart rates. Those patients that normally are encountered or are treated for slow heart rates or basically are those patients that may end up needing, let's say, permanent pacemaker. So we have been implanting the Health Alliance permanent pacemakers for this condition. In addition to this, we also have treated patients with tachycardias or the rapid heartbeats that causes arrhythmias. And for those patients, actually, we treat them with intracardiac defibrillators or implantable cardiac defibrillators, which we also call ICDs. We also have other technologies that we are also implanting at Health Alliance, like implantable loop recorder. What is an implantable loop recorder? It's a small monitor similar to a Holter monitor, which basically does an EKG or is always recording an EKG. And when somebody has an arrhythmia that can be lethal or non-lethal but can cause significant symptoms, we can actually detect what kind of arrhythmia the patient is having. And with that, we can actually see it and be able to treat the patient appropriately. It's a very good tool to detect silent arrhythmias like atrial fibrillation, et cetera.
And how do patients come to you? Is it through their primarily through their primary care physician, or they're experiencing something, or they've had some event, emergency event? Or is it all of the above? How do they get to you?
It's quite interesting. Initially, in the past, all the patients to electrophysiology were being referred by a primary cardiologist who identified the need for particular service. However, as the time has been passing, now we're getting more patients from primary care physicians who understand how to manage a lot of these conditions, and they already know that the patient do need advanced cardiac electrophysiological services, and that's when they refer it to us. However, because of the new innovations in regards to news and very good programs like the one that you have, which is informing and alerting the patient, now I'm seeing another third way of patients, which actually come to me because they already heard similar situations, had similar symptoms, or were diagnosed in the past, but were never sent to an electrophysiologist. And now they're seeking for this expert advice in terms of how to manage the electrical arrhythmias, for instance. So it's a mix, basically.
So the three, let me make sure I understand it. So the three anomalies could be a rapid heartbeat, a heartbeat that's too slow, and an irregular heartbeat. Is that correct?
Yeah. So basically, as an electrophysiologist, we provide services for patients with tachycardia, which are very rapid heartbeats, or those we manage with medicine or with ablations, which are procedures that we can do via the major veins, basically via the groins or the neck, and basically insert catheters into the patient's heart and get rid of the arrhythmia. Depending upon what kind of arrhythmia, they have very good success. For instance, if somebody has SVT, in SVT or supraventricular tachycardia, the success rate of doing an ablation is more than 90-95%. Basically, in medicine, 90 or 95% is almost curative. The same thing with atrial fibrillation. The success rate of an ablation for atrial fibrillation is around 80%, which is extremely high in terms of success in medicine. And therefore, we provide these advanced services that one way or the other, our patients do get to improve a lot. Now, the other patient, when they have bradycardias or slow heart rates, is totally the opposite. Instead of the heart going very fast, the heart is going very slow. And there are several reasons why this can happen. But when we encounter these phenomenons, these patients are usually treated, A, by identifying the reason why they are having a slow heart rate. Sometimes they are on medicine that can cause it, so obviously we have to discontinue. Or if they are not on medicine, or if there are no other reversible etiology, like, for instance, Lyme disease, that is very prevalent in our community. And I have seen, I've been called for a lot of patients for heart block in the hospital just to find out, and they asked me to go and implant a pacemaker. But when I go over their history, I realize that they were previously bitten by a tick in the community, which, you know, carries a disease for Lyme disease or Lyme carditis.
Yeah, we see a lot of that here.
Yeah, and those actually get treated with antibiotics, and they don't need pacemaker because after a couple of weeks of antibiotics, their heart rhythm is normal. Obviously, you're not going to place a pacemaker if this is a reversible issue. And we see a lot of those Lyme disease in the community. And obviously, there are other reasons that can be reversible, like hypothyroidism. So my job is first identifying whether or not the patient has a reversible condition that can lead to this issue. And if I don't see a reversible condition, then I implant them with a permanent pacemaker only if they really need it. And again, as most of you know, a pacemaker is a small device that gets implanted below the skin with two wires or electrodes that gets implanted or inserted inside the heart, and they are left behind. And nonetheless, it's something that is implanted. And every time you do a surgical procedure, there's always some risk to it, like action, bleeding, damage to artery, nerve or vein. However, you must first make sure that the patient really needs a device before you actually can commit them to a lifelong therapy like this.
Now, that technology has come a long way over time, has it not? And so, you know, the average layperson might think, well, gee, you know, if this electronic device might be the only thing that's keeping me alive, I need to be worried about that. Do they need to be worried about that? Or is it a pretty reliable technology? And is it fairly, efficacious?
That question is very important. The reason why that question is very important in an environment like our environment, which has a huge area, and I have patients that actually are not able to make it to the clinic as frequent as we wanted to. But the pacemaker, the newer forms of pacemaker, which is what we are implanting, they have remote monitoring. What that entails is that the pacemaker comes with an external device that sometimes is as big as a cell phone that you just plug it in next to your bed. And that device every night downloads the information from the pacemaker of the patient and it sends it directly to our website. And not only that, it has the capacity to alert us if the pacemaker itself is not working good or if he encounters another arrhythmia that the patient may also have. And that will allow us to give a patient the call to the patient, ask him to come to the ER or ask them to come to the office if he can wait and address the issue. Not only that has minimized the way we normally follow up the patient who have pacemaker. let's say 10 years ago, the patient needed to be seen every 3 months just for a pacemaker interrogation. With the newer technology, they only come once a year. Why? Because we are watching them every night for the most part. And every 2 or 3 months, we do a remote interrogation as well, just to make sure that we haven't missed not seeing anything during those 3 months. So that is very important, because in a community like in the Kingston region, we do have patients that actually live very remote, and it might be harder for them to make it into the office. I have patients that sometimes it takes them like an hour and a half just to come over, almost from upstate, to come for a visit to see me in the office. And obviously, this kind of technology has revolutionized the way we treat our patients.
Ulster County is geographically the size of Rhode Island, so you make a good point. And Dr. Rojas, we want to learn a lot more about this, because this is a really interesting topic, and you're so knowledgeable. But first, we're going to take a very short break. You're listening to Healthy Ulster Radio, and we'll be back after these words.
Westchester Medical Center Health Network's new Health Alliance Hospital is open in Kingston at 105 Mary's Avenue. The new hospital delivers on WMC Health's commitment to provide access to advanced healthcare right here in this community. Our comfortable and welcoming new Health Alliance Hospital has highly skilled doctors, nurses, and staff. We are ready to make your healthcare experience the best it can be. Here are just a few of the services ready to take care of you and your loved ones when you need us. A new emergency department with 24/7 triage for behavioral health needs, life-saving advanced cardiology programs, family birth center, private rooms, precise imaging technology, critical care support. And later this year, our inpatient psychiatry program will be reestablished to complement existing emergency and outpatient programs. Go to hahv.org for information. That's hahv.org.
And now, Healthy Ulster continues. This is a weekly presentation of the Ulster County Department of Health on Magic 92.5 WGHQ.
Welcome back. You're listening to Healthy Ulster Radio, and today we're talking about technology and innovation for addressing heart disease. We have with us Dr. Ramadas Rojas, and he's a cardiologist in clinical cardiac electrophysiology. Dr. Rojas, we were talking about pacemakers, and we were talking about some of the anomalies in heartbeat that lead to heart disease and other conditions that need to be addressed with various technologies. But can you specify a little bit about the early detection and prevention of stroke with your technology?
Yes, in particular, so whenever somebody has a stroke, and the doctor has tried to figure out why the patient had a stroke, but they were not able to find a reason why, we are always left with the question whether or not an arrhythmia like atrial fibrillation, which is one of the biggest culprits for causing stroke, was the issue. The problem is that atrial fibrillation is a paroxysmal phenomenon, electrical disturbances, where you can see it now, but you may not be able to see it for the next 2, 3, 5 months, and so on. So a new technology has emerged, which is called implantable loop recorder. We call it ILR. And the way this technology works is that it's a small little chip, more or less 2 centimeters in length, maybe 0.5 centimeter in width. It gets implanted just below the skin, right in front of the chest, of the heart and the chest area. And this also records EKG all the time, 24 hours of the day, 7 hours of the week. Stays working and recording for at least 2 to 5 years, depending upon the brand that we use. So the way this works is that this technology works also with remote monitoring. By that, I mean that we can give you either a cell phone or something that you can place next to your bed. And some of this actually can be hooked on to your cell phone. But via remote monitoring, this is able to provide us the information of whether or not you're having hidden atrial fibrillation. By that, we mean atrial fibrillation that has not been detected. Why this is important is because if you do happen to have atrial fibrillation and you had a reason for a stroke before, and you had a stroke before, but it was never identified, the only way to prevent you from having a second stroke will be utilizing an anticoagulant or a very powerful blood thinner. Now, you would ask, why don't we use this blood thinner on everybody. Well, we know that blood thinner also carries some chances and some risk of causing inappropriate bleeding. So we don't want to be giving blood thinners and medicine unnecessarily to patients. So we want to be able to provide the patient with the powerful blood thinner only when they need it, like in the case of atrial fibrillation in the setting of stroke. Not only that, the ILR can also detect other arrhythmias like slow heart rates or bradycardias, which those patients get treated with pacemaker. ILR is also very important on those patients that have been passing out, and we don't know why they're passing out. Because why? Because most of the time when people pass out, it's because there is an electrical disturbance of the heart or an arrhythmia that can lead to this, either the heart rate going too slow or going too fast. And either of them can lead to the same phenomenon, and therefore they need to be treated appropriately. And that's why an implant of loop recorder is very important to manage this patient population as well. So ILR has come a long way. And again, it's a small chip that gets implanted below the skin. Takes me 5 minutes to do. I can do it with my eyes closed. If my patient asks me, it's really very simple. Only a little bit of Numen medicine. I don't even give him an IV when I'm going to implant this. I just go ahead and implant it. It's just easier to implant it than even take the time to place an IV. And the patient is out of the door in 10 minutes after the procedure is implanted. That's how simple it is.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to ask a dumb question now. Why not implant such a device in anyone who may be at risk, even if the symptoms are not completely evident?
Yeah, that's a very good question. I've been finding a lot of utility to devices, especially like an implantable recorder. But the most important thing is that whenever you're going to use a technology like this, you have to use it on the appropriate patient. We cannot just go around and implant the device inappropriately on everybody, because we're going to start finding things. And if something is not causing issue, then there is no point of role in doing this. Because, yes, we will find stuff. And then we're going to be always having questions on how to manage those things when they really were not causing a lot of things to begin with. But in the future, I can totally foresee that that's going to change. And the reason for that is that implantable loop recorder has been emerging as a technology. Now we have implantable loop recorder that are also not only able to record arrhythmias or basically slow or fast heart rate. Now we have loop recorder that actually can detect temperature and send the trigger to the primary care physician and say, your patient is having fever. Obviously, that technology is not being used, but it's still being under research, but that technology is there. I'm quite sure that in the next 5, maybe 10 years, we're going to have implantable loop recorders that probably are going to be measuring oxygen saturation. Not only you're going to be seeing arrhythmias, but now you're going to be able to see the saturation of oxygen. Somebody who may have a coexisting issue with, let's say, pulmonary disease. Uh-huh. I mean, I am hypothesizing, but all of that technology is possible. And the technology is there and can be done. And again, I'm quite sure that in the future, we're going to be seeing more devices that are going to be used as a primary prevention device rather than as a secondary prevention utility, like in this case. Secondary prevention is when something happened. Primary prevention is before something happened, which is
right.
Basically.
Which makes so much sense, right? Because the more reliable information that you have and a patient has, quite frankly, in, you know, managing their own health, you know, is really critical. Mm-hmm. So Dr. Rojas, do you have an example of, you know, without using names, of a patient where the ILR or other technology really helped save that person's life, literally?
Yes. I had the fortunate case of a very young gentleman. He was only 45 to 50 years of age, somewhere around there, that unfortunately was sent to me because he had a retinal emboli. A little blood clot went into the retina and left him partially blind on the eye, maybe on that eye, maybe like able to see only 25%. The other 75% of his vision on that particular eye was gone. So they asked me whether or not this patient has been having atrial fibrillation. So, and this is not like a major stroke. We're talking about something tiny in the eye. It's not even like a full stroke where you have half side of your body unable to move it because of the stroke. This is something very localized. So I went ahead and implanted this technology, the implantable loop recorder, or ILR, and maybe like 1 or 2 months after the device was implanted, 2 months after it was implanted, he identified that the patient was having atrial fibrillation. And he had an episode of atrial fibrillation that lasted more or less around 24 hours or so. And therefore, we proved that the reason why this patient ended up being blind from the eye was because of a stroke or an embolism probably originating from the atrial fibrillation. So now what happened? So now we changed the way we manage that patient. Now he's not going to be on aspirin, which is what a neurologist would prescribe somebody with stroke. Only baby aspirin. They wouldn't recommend anticoagulant. So now that he has atrial fibrillation, he has an indication for a blood thinner like Eliquis or like Xarelto or like Coumadin. There are several. And now we are able to provide him the appropriate medical therapy and therefore minimize the chance of him having a second stroke. Second stroke after something so tiny like this can be even more fatal.
And Dr. Rojas, can you talk for a moment just from your experience about lifestyle, preventative measures, what people can do generally to help minimize the risk of heart disease and stroke and the various conditions you treat?
Yes. So basically the same thing that works in the heart is it works all over your body. And it's having a very healthy lifestyle, healthy meals, basically a Mediterranean food or basically more salad, more vegetables in your meal, staying away from carbohydrates and staying away from very complex meals, and basically having more fruit, incorporating more fruits in your diets, and eating healthy. People know what is healthy eating. People know what is not healthy eating. Staying away from junk food, staying away from fried things. All of those things in terms of food are very important. The second thing is to do exercise. And it's always good to do a little bit, at least a little bit of exercise if it's possible. Some patients are not able to do the 30 minutes that we recommend at least four times a week, which is what standard we basically recommend all the patients. But if they can do 5 or 10 minutes every day, or split that into a couple of times a day, at least something is something. And the more they do, the better. And doing exercise is important. Walking, running, jogging.
Should be enjoyable, right? It shouldn't be
exactly.
Tedious, right?
Exactly.
So you want to do it.
Yeah, you want to do it. Now, sometimes dealing with exercise is a problem. The way that I deal with my patient in terms of how to counsel them about exercise, I never tell them start doing 30 minutes once a day, four times a week. No. You know how I tell them? I tell them start doing 6 minutes. Five times of the week, 6 minutes. Do a 6 minute walk five times. After 1 or 2 months, go to 10 minutes. After 1 or 2 more months, go to 15 minutes.
Right.
After several months, go to 30 minutes.
In public health, we like to call it small steps that lead to big change.
And it's important because a big thing that I encounter with not only with the patient, actually even with myself and with everybody, is basically cheating the brain. We are very good finding excuses of why not to do exercise when indeed we really need it. So we can find silly excuses to prevent us from doing the thing that really will keep us in good health.
So, Dr. Rojas, before we're just about out of time, so before we are, can you tell our listeners where they can connect with you and the clinical cardiac electrophysiology services at Health Alliance?
Sure. So, basically, I am located at Health Alliance, and I'm also located at Westchester Medical Center and Mid-Hudson Region. So, yes, I am playing everywhere. But if you need to see me at Health Alliance, the best phone number to make an appointment with me will be the 845-339-3663. Again, 845-339-3663. It'll be more than a pleasure for me to take care of your cardiac issues.
Thank you, Dr. Rojas, for sharing this really important information and for all of the work that you do and your colleagues do on behalf of all of us here in Ulster County. Thank you so much.
My pleasure.
And you're listening to Healthy Ulster Radio. Tune in next week for more great information that you can use to keep yourself, your family, and our community healthy and strong. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Healthy Ulster Radio Show from the Ulster County Department of Health. This program is a weekly community affairs presentation sponsored by the Emergency Department at Health Alliance Hospital in Kingston, a member of WMC Health. Thanks for listening, and be sure to join us for another edition of the Healthy Ulster Radio Show next weekend.